ever prescription depressant hit the shelves today. Approved by the FDA last month, Despondex is intended as a treatment for the approximately 20 million Americans who are insufferably cheery. Tests prove the drug is effective at reducing a range of symptoms, from squealing loudly when a friend calls to use of the phrase cool beans and excessive hugging. Dr. Alman Way calls the drug a huge step forward in the battle against exuberance.
If you're in a good mood every so often, well, that's fine. That's normal. This is for those that have a persistent positive outlook on life.
Eva Henry of New Haven, Connecticut began participating in a clinical trial of Despondex 6 weeks ago.
I was always telling people how cute their outfits were and bringing them little gifts. I'd beam at anyone who made eye contact with me. I didn't realize life didn't have to be like that.
Eva said she never knew how her annoyingly chipper attitude was affecting those around her.
Over and over again, I'd ask Jeff to ride his bike down to the botanical garden with me, no matter how many times he said no.
And she was always smiling, but I didn't know what to do to help her.
I used to think, why am I the only one trying to set up single friends with each other? And now I realize it. I was sick. I needed treatment.
Eva says the drug may have saved their marriage.
Now Jeff and I can just waste a night sitting on the couch, watching a TV show neither of us enjoy. Like a regular couple.
Not everyone is convinced that Despondex is the cure-all for perkiness, however. In this week's Time magazine, Michael Polosik of UCLA argues that many patients get similar results from natural remedies, something as simple as a diet of corn syrup and white bread and a total lack of exercise. But Dr. Way disagrees.
We have to erase the stigma attached with getting chirpy people help, real medical help. I mean, do you know what it's like to be around these people? It's pretty f***ing annoying.
Doctors estimate the new drug could reduce the number of costume or theme parties in the U.S. by up to 40%.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Benjamin Disraeli said that power has but one duty, to secure the social welfare of the people. And so it follows that any society in which the poorest of the sick and feeble are allowed to die because of unequal access to health care is inferior. And I'm leery of any democracy in which the Congress is so dishonest as to promise whatever it takes to get elected, but then become rapidly disconnected with the things that keep their voters alive. Like they thrive off of donations from health management organizations taking gifts and vacations that obligate them to do what's not within the best interest of their constituents. And how is it that the masses of people in the richest country in the world are not afforded even the basic level of insurance when the proper protocol should be Medicare for all, but instead we get caught up in jargon like public options and single payer? If you're broke and sick in America, then you ain't got a prayer. If you can't afford to write a blank check, then all American doctors have for you is a blank stare at your aches and your coughs. And big insurance companies can't do anything that Medicare doesn't do, but they do it for six times the administrative cost. Even though Congress forces Medicare to purchase prescriptions at a loss, and nobody's surprised that health care reform has transformed into a bill that says publicly traded insurance companies get to be taxpayer subsidized and still allowed to raise their premiums sky high, which is corporate socialism. And the saddest thing about the teabaggers is that they're in the habit of advocating for the people who are most against them, as long as they're against the president. Like, his election was the denial of their suffrage, and they're standing behind Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin, and Rush Limbaugh, and a bunch of other rich people who could care less about the lack of working-class Medicare coverage. Even if it's against their own family, as long as it's anti-Obama, then it's pro-something they could live with. And the only reason we don't have Medicare for the millions is there are too many powerful people in this country earning billions off of exacerbating American sickness.
I'm confused. How can you know what to believe when there's so much propaganda?
Perhaps I can help you, Chuck. The study of history reveals a great deal of propaganda that has been used to fight wars and win wars. Propaganda can also be used for peace.
So you see, Chuck, propaganda is important.
Well worth any time you give studying it.
I see that. But how can you study it?
Well, you can begin by investigating the techniques of propaganda. Here, I've listed some of the main ones. Glittering generalities, transfer, name-calling, card stacking, testimonial, plain folks, and bandwagon. You'll find these techniques used in many places, in many ways, for many different purposes. Your job is to recognize them when you see them.
Well, now, in regard to this problem of the ultimate revolution, this has been very well summed up by the moderator. In the past, we can say that all revolutions have essentially aimed at changing the environment in order to change the individual. I mean, there's been the political revolution, the economic revolution. In the time of the Reformation, the religious revolution, all these aimed, as I say, not directly at the human being, but at his surroundings, so that by modifying the surroundings, you did achieve, at one remove, an effect upon the human being. Today, we are faced, I think, with the approach of what may be called the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, where a man can act directly on the mind-body of his fellows. Well, needless to say, some kind of direct action on human mind-bodies has been going on since the beginning of time. But this has generally been of a violent nature. The techniques of terrorism have been known from time immemorial, and people have employed them with more or less ingenuity, sometimes with the utmost crudity, sometimes with a good deal of skill acquired by a process of trial and error, finding out what the best ways of using torture, imprisonment, constraints of various kinds. I think it was Metternich said many years ago, you can do everything with bayonets except sit on them. That if you are going to control any population for any length of time, you must have some measure of consent. It's exceedingly difficult to see how pure terrorism can function indefinitely. It can function for a fairly long time, but I think sooner or later you have to bring in an element of persuasion, an element of getting people to consent to what is happening to them. Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. This is seems to me the ultimate in malevolent revolution, shall we say. And this is a problem which has interested me for many years, and about which I wrote 30 years ago a fable, The Brave New World, which is essentially the account of a society making use of all the devices at that time available, and some of the devices which I imagined to be possible, making use of them in order to, first of all, to standardize the population, to iron out inconvenient human differences, to create, so to say, mass-produced models of human beings arranged in some kind of a scientific caste system. And since then I have continued to be extremely interested in this problem, and I have noticed with increasing dismay that a number of the predictions which were purely fantastic when I made them 30 years ago have come true, or seem in process of coming true, that a number of techniques about which I talked seem to be here already, and that there seems to be a general movement in the direction of this kind of ultimate revolution, this method of control by which people can be made to enjoy a state of affairs which by any decent standard they ought not to enjoy. The enjoyment of servitude. Well, this process, as I say, has gone on for over the years, and I become more and more interested in what is happening. And here I would like briefly to compare the parable of Brave New World with another parable which was put forth more recently in George Orwell's book 1984. Orwell wrote his book between 45 and 48, at the time when the Stalinist terror regime was still in full swing, and just after the collapse of the Hitlerian terror regime. And his book, which I admire greatly, it's a book of very great talent and extraordinary ingenuity, shows, is so to say a projection into the future of the immediate past, of what for him was the immediate past, and the immediate present. It was a projection into the future of a society where control was exercised wholly by terrorism and the violent attacks upon the mind body of individuals. Whereas my own book, which was written in 1932, when there was only a mild dictatorship in the form of Mussolini in existence, was not overshadowed by the idea of terrorism, and I was therefore free in a way which Orwell was not free, to think about these other methods of control, these non-violent methods. And I'm inclined to think that the scientific dictatorships of the future, and I think there are going to be scientific dictatorships in many parts of the world, will be probably a good deal nearer to the Brave New World pattern than to the 1984 pattern. They will be a good deal nearer, not because of any humanitarian qualms in the scientific dictators, but simply because the Brave New World pattern is probably a good deal more efficient than the other. That if you can get people to consent to the state of affairs in which they are living, the state of servitude, the state of being, having their differences ironed out and being made amenable to mass production methods on the social level, if you can do this, then you are likely to have a much more stable, a much more lasting society, a much more easily controllable society than you would if you were relying wholly on clubs and firing squads and concentration camps. So that my own feeling is that the 1984 picture was tinged, of course, by the immediate past and the present in which Orwell was living, but that the past and present of those years does not represent, I feel, the likely trend of what is going to happen. Needless to say, we shall never get rid of terrorism. This will always find its way to the surface. But I think that insofar as dictators become more and more scientific, more and more concerned with a technically perfectly running society, they will be more and more interested in the kind of techniques which I imagined and described from existing realities in Brave New World. So that it seems to me then that this ultimate revolution is really not very far away, that we already a number of the techniques for bringing about this kind of control are here, and it remains to be seen when and where and by whom they will first be applied in any large scale.
Should children be prescribed pills that treat conditions they don't even have? How about drugs that have already killed kids nationwide? A new warning from a federal panel is adding to the argument over the over-medication of America's children. It's an issue Fox's Douglas Kennedy has been following quite closely. He was the first national reporter to link antidepressant medications to adolescent suicide and violence. That prompted a lot of government action. Douglas?
Yeah, John, for years the FDA ignored the dangerous side effects of antidepressants. Now it seems to be doing the same thing with antipsychotics, a group of drugs some say is seriously harming our nation's youth. A young woman on YouTube describing what happened to her on Risperdal.
It affects my mood, makes me depressed.
She's one of hundreds of videographers complaining about the side effects of the new atypical antipsychotic drugs, including Zyprexa, Abilify, and Seroquel, drugs whose use in children has increased fivefold in the last 15 years, despite showing little to no scientific benefit.
The FDA is too heavily influenced by the drug industry.
Now, an independent panel of doctors and psychiatrists convened by the Food and Drug Administration itself agrees, criticizing the FDA for allowing the drugs to be prescribed to children for off-label use.
The reason they're prescribed so much is because they are very big profit centers for the drug industry. Anytime you come into a doctor's office and say, my kid's a problem in school or he's acting out, they start coming up with a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, attention deficit disorder, which are very, very vague diseases.
Stephen Scheller is a lawyer in Philadelphia who represents patients damaged by antipsychotic drugs, including these boys who had to have mastectomies because they grew breasts on Risperdal. He and others point the finger directly at Thomas Loughran, director of the FDA's Division of Psychiatric Products, who many say has been turning a blind eye to dangerous side effects out of deference to his friends in the pharmaceutical industry.
He's been accused of major conflicts of interest, ghost-authoring studies, supporting a new diagnosis to use these drugs, and he is not protecting the public health. He is protecting the drug industry's profit.
A spokesperson for the FDA said Loughran was not available for comment, though he is quoted in the New York Times claiming to be, quote, puzzled.
Science team from 1998 to 2000, and I sold olanzapine, Zyprexa. Lilly was is being accused of having suppressed data regarding the side effects of the drug. I can say firsthand, as someone who had sold it, someone who had encountered a lot of these grievances from physicians, so mostly psychiatrists, we ran into an uncomfortably high frequency those side effects. One side effect is the associated obesity. A lot of antipsychotics have a variety of side effects. And the big one for ours, no pun intended, was the incredible amount of weight gain that patients would get so quickly. And perhaps linked to this is associated diabetes with prolonged use of Zyprexa. When I would relay these concerns for my clients, these psychiatrists were really concerned that their patients were blimping up. We were instructed by our DMs to downplay those side effects, to focus on the efficacy of the drug. And if it was still a question of concern, we were given, I remember one particular piece of advice that it almost sounds ridiculous in hindsight. We were told to recommend having the patient drink a glass of water before taking the pill, right before a meal, and then having a glass of water after a meal, or during the course of the meal, a big glass of water, in the hopes that the stomach would expand. The muscles in the stomach are connected to nerves that connect to the satiety centers in your brain that tell you when you're full. The glass is half full, and I say what drug works better than our competitors. Our drug is brand new and it's state of the art and it affects these receptors. And in terms of what's more important, do you want them to get better or do you want them to stay thin? Would you rather have a thin psychotic patient or a fat, stable patient?
I take a couple offers, I count a couple downers, but nothing compares to these blue and yellow purple pills. I've been to Mushroom Mountain, once or twice bottles counting, but nothing compares to these blue and yellow purple pills.
30 dozen, 80 of us, shady brothers, ladies lovers. That's why our baby mothers love us, but they hate each other. They probably wanna take each other out and date each other.
My name is Gwen Olson, and I am the author of Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher, God's Call to Loving Arms. And I wrote my book in August of 2005. I spent 15 years in the pharmaceutical industry working as a detail rep, primarily as a specialist rep calling on psychiatry, cardiology, neurology, endocrinology, and OBGYN. And after 15 years in the industry, I felt like I had a moral obligation to come out and tell people what I had experienced, what I had seen, and what I had participated in the industry, because there were a number of things that I had identified and recognized as being dangerous to the American people at large. And one of those things was the consistent minimization of side effects that drug reps were taught to do. And I was very concerned about the fact that it was seemingly less and less popular to give full disclosure about our drugs as time went on in my profession. And we were more responsible for marketing information being given to the doctors than actual good medical information, fair balanced medical information. And we were given the exact verbiage, the taglines that went along with the marketing department's plan for that particular sales period, and those were specifically the things that we were supposed to say. And often these things had been cleared through legal so that we weren't saying things that were illegal, but the semantics of them might have been implying things to be a little bit differently than they were. And I'll give you an example of that. One of the biggest things that I saw that took place was when we would get marketing promotional materials. For example, a sales piece would come out and have a bar chart or information from a clinical study on it that raised concern with the physicians. Say a number of physicians would start to complain about the excessive number of CNS side effects, for example. Then what we would see is the next marketing period, after reps had disclosed that during a district meeting or some kind of a pool meeting that we had, that marketing piece would come out and would be revised, and that bar chart would be changed, or that, you know, specific information would be altered so that perhaps the CNS side effects were now broken out to dizziness and, you know, the various other side effects that would be included in the central nervous system section. So it didn't show quite so drastically how severe the side effects were.
I take a couple offers, I down a couple downers, but nothing compares to these blue and yellow purple pills. I've been to Mushroom Mountain, once or twice, but who's counting? But nothing compares to these blue and yellow purple pills.
I'm at a rave looking like a slave, high off chronic, gin and tonic, demonic, body smell like vomit.
So they diagnosed me as major, you know, that I had major depression. They weren't sure about bipolar or ADD. So I had a very high IQ, and it was strange. I had a team of people, because I was in the child psychiatric ward, and when I first arrived, they immediately put me on 90 milligrams of Prozac. So I was a zombie. You know, you're completely numb. So they were basically like, well, let's test this. Let's just, here's a guinea pig, a 17-year-old guinea pig. Let's blast her. 90 milligrams. So when I was released, I didn't know how to function as a zombie. I had no personality. None of my underlying issues had been addressed or resolved. So I attempted to kill myself. I took a whole bunch more than 90 milligrams, not really wanting to die, but just wanting help.
I
I'll take a couple uppers, I down a couple downers, but nothing compares to these blue and yellow purple pills. I've been to Mushroom Mountain once or twice, but who's counting? But nothing compares to these blue and yellow purple pills.
30 dozen, 80 of us, shady brothers, ladies, lovers. That's why our baby mothers love us, but they hate each other. They probably wanna take each other out and date each other.
To change yourself, and we'll never do that because the dollars now, it's everybody wants a dollar and a toy. Everybody's got a cell phone that'll make pancakes and rub their balls, so they don't, nobody wants to rock the boat, nobody wants to change, don't change anything, and we're in a nice downward glide. I call it circling the drain. That's what I'm going to call my next book, Circling the Drain. And the circles get smaller and smaller and faster if you watch a drain, if you watch a sink empty. And we'll be gone. And that's fine. I welcome it. I wish I could live 1,000 years to watch it happen from a distance so I could see it all.
Does it depress you?
No. It lifts me up. It lifts me up because I gave up on this stuff. I gave up on my species, and I gave up on my fellow Americans. I gave up on my countrymen because I think they all, I think we squandered great gifts. I think humans were given great, great gifts. Walking upright, binocular vision, opposable thumb, large brain, making tools. Make tools, large brain, make better tools. Talk, have to link language. You take this, put in here. We learned language, the brain got bigger, language. We grew. We had great gifts, and we gave it up all up for both men, for both money and God. God and mammon, both. We gave it up to the high priests. It's your job. It's God's will. That's what they say. People say it's God's will. I mean, God can do anything he wants, so why pray? They say, you pray for something. Okay, he didn't answer my prayers. Well, it's God's will. Well, if it's God's will, why did I even pray in the first place? He's going to do what he wants anyway. We gave it all up to superstition, primitive superstition. Primitive. Invisible man in the sky looking down, keeping track of what we do. Make sure we don't do the wrong thing. If we do, he puts us in hell and we burn forever. That kind of shit is very limiting. It's very limiting for this brain we have. So we keep ourselves limited, and then we want a toy and a gizmo and gold, and we want shiny things, and we want something to plug in that'll make big, big, big things for us. And all that shit is nothing. It's nothing. We gave it all up. And Americans, who also had great gifts, when you take the theory of democratic rule, self-government, okay, they started off wrong. They owned slaves. They didn't let women vote. They didn't let people who didn't own land vote. Fine. They got off on the wrong foot. But the ideas were good. But we blew that. We polluted it. We polluted it with this stuff, things, material goods, games, gizmos, toys, gadgets. Having possessions, he's got a bigger truck. He says, see his truck? It's bigger than mine. I'm getting a new truck. Here's a big truck. Oh, I'm getting that one. That's what, you got a video in it? You DVD too? He don't have a DVD. I got a DVD, you know. Oh, please. Whatever happened, and all of that is what happened, you know. And that's why I'm divorced from it now. I see it from a distance. I give myself a divorce. I said, George, emotionally you have no stake in this. You don't care one way or another. So watch it. Have fun. You know what? I say it this way. When you're born in this world, you're given a ticket to the freak show. And when you're born in America, you're given a front row seat. And some of us get to sit there with notebooks. And I'm a notebook. And, oh, my God, did you see that? Did you see what he just...
and I watch the freak show, and I get my notes, and I make up stuff about it, and I talk about the freaks, and the freaks are all humans, and they're like me, and they're all the same, we're all the same. I'm not better, I'm not different, I'm just apart now. I'm separate, I'm over here because I put myself out of the mix. I don't have a stake in the outcome. I'm not a cheerleader for a given outcome now. Oh, they say if you scratch a cynic, you'll find a disappointed idealist. And I would admit that somewhere underneath all of this, there's a little flicker of a flame of idealism that would love to see it all change.
Wilson is a 19-year-old with a physical condition. He normally does everything he can to hide, but he's decided to go public to alert others to the dangers of a drug he took. As a 10-year-old, Sam was prescribed Risperdal for behavioural problems. He was on it for 7 years, but the drug had a pretty humiliating side effect for a teenage boy. He developed enlarged breasts.
There's a full moon howling at the night, and its bark is much worse than its bite. So we must go out and dance around. Yes, we must go out tonight. So the doctors came on the evening train with their flasks and their caskets and vials. Mass psychosis was the diagnosis. So we all cashed our checks and went wild.
Sam Wilson has spent his teenage years in fear of humiliation and embarrassment. That's because as a teenage boy, he suffered the unthinkable. He's developed enlarged female-like breasts.
My battle through college, I was teased and couldn't take part in the activities that they had for PE and outdoor education. I didn't want to go there because they had to go, kayaking and, you know, all the swimming and stuff like that. I just didn't want to take part in it, really.
Because you did, obviously didn't want to bare your chest.
No, exactly. I was ashamed, really.
For 7 years, Sam Wilson took the drug Risperdal. He was prescribed it as a 10-year-old by a psychiatrist to treat Tourette syndrome and the behavioural disorder ADD. His mother, Pam, became so concerned at what the drug appeared to be doing to him that 3 years ago she called the Auckland office of the company that manufactures it, Janssen.
They said, oh no, I was concerned Sam's breasts appeared to be getting bigger. They said, no, it doesn't do that, don't worry about it. However, he eventually went to another doctor. He was changed to a different psychiatrist and he was concerned.
A drug used to treat ADHD children is causing concern in the United States.
And then she saw the story on 3 News this week about how teenage boys on Risperdal in the United States have developed breasts.
Before, when he developed a breast on one side and began producing milk.
There's a full moon howling at the night, and its bark is much worse than its bite. We must go out tonight. La vida.
Felt real affinity with the people because Sam's had this problem for some time. His breasts have grown and he's got to the stage now where he can't take it, and it's psychologically giving him a hard time, and he wants to have it operated on.
In the United States, a lawyer acting for the nine teenage boys is suing the company.
It's about as bad a thing as a boy can get that I can imagine.
And Pam Wilson says she'll consider doing the same, such has been the trauma for her son. Jansen says it does not promote Risperdal for ADHD, and breast swelling in men is listed as a side effect. Sam says he was never told, and now he's turning to his only option, surgery.
There's a full moon howling at the night, and its bark is much worse than its bite. So we must go, yes we must go, yes we must go out tonight. La gripa.
For the most part, if you look at these mental illness diagnosis manuals, and if you go through them over the years, you'll find that they keep changing and adding more and more and more. It's actually nothing more than social engineering. That's my opinion, quite frankly. And these drugs do more damage than you could ever imagine. They cause all kinds of other problems. They call them side effects. They're not side effects. They're actually effects. They give them drugs to cause the effect.
Over 75% of the foster kids are already on antipsychotic medication. So, I mean, it doesn't get much uglier than that, frankly. The reality is that when you've got 75% of the most vulnerable kids on antipsychotic medications, you know that there's some kind of trial going on. They're dumbing down people. And frankly, you know, this is what we're putting another, you know, 10 million or so kids who are diagnosed as, quote, bipolar disorder. That's the exact class of drugs that kids are being put on. And so, you know, it's really an ugly thing, and it's only made uglier by the fact that our tax dollars are supporting it. In Florida, for example, that 75% of the foster kids that I was mentioning to you, I think it's 55 to 58% of those are being paid for by Medicare. It's a ridiculous, heinous situation.
I look out below me, the clouds on top, the blue. I see kids thinking about nothing, 'cause there's absolutely nothing to do. The door ain't wide, just open, we're open to the sky. I sit on top the cage, keep hoping, I'm saying, 'cause on top the cage, just try, on top the cage.
The medical ethics have just completely gone out the window. If they ever existed, they are long in the distant past by now. Because, frankly, you know, these men, when you mentioned Prozac, the original study that we unearthed and we found paperwork to track this, I mean, 1982 were the first tests that were done on Prozac, and they were done in Germany. And the German equivalent of the FDA basically said, you know, there's a real problem with this drug. In the first trials alone, 16 people tried to kill themselves. And we're talking about 16 out of the first 43.
Because on top the cage is the harmony that bars and chains never chime. Wherever we go, it's not far from me, better be friend. All that time on top, top, top of the cage, top the cage. On top, top of the cage, top the cage. On top the cage. Standing on top of the cage.
nonsense on the other side to rest once and for all. It is absolutely a fact that at the bare minimum, 8 out of the last 12 school shooters around the country were indeed on these antidepressant drugs. It probably was at least 9 out of the last 12, but they sealed the records of one of the Columbine killers.
So I told people, come out of your cage, time to break, lock forever. Join together, march on top, hold my hand, say goodbye to never. You can be my man if you want to hang out here. Or just me, my girl, on top of this world, and we sit here and we stare at the clouds, green hills, and the mountain tops, and the river to the side. Well, you can come too if you want. You don't have to hide. On top the gate, on top, top of the gate, top the gate, on top, top of the gate, top the gate, on top, top of the gate, top the gate, on top, on top, on top the gate, on top, top of the gate, top the gate. Top of the gate, top of the gate, on top, top of the gate, top of the gate, standing on top of the gate.
Once they have a psychotic reaction and they get put on an antipsychotic medication, there basically is no cure at that point. So they tell you straight up, you could be 16 years old, 12, 11, doesn't matter. They'll tell you that you're going to be on drugs the rest of your life. And, you know, this is one of the main things that really propelled me to produce this film. I could see nothing beyond the murder and the mayhem. I could see no sanity, literally, coming out of the medical establishment or the FDA or the American Psychiatric Association. And, you know, you start seeing, when you peel back the dirty layers, you start seeing how many people who are making the decisions on these drugs are getting payola from the drug companies themselves. I mean, how can it be, you know, in the record company executives from the 70s and 80s were thrown in prison for payola, for getting a few dollars under the table to get a record played on the radio, and yet we've got researchers and scientists and doctors and decision makers who are getting millions of dollars under the table, not reporting it, and still walking around free as a bird. Children, 56% is the minimum number of people who are also have conflicts of interest with the drug companies. Well, that on some committees, and you're talking about the antipsychotic drugs and schizophrenia groups, 100% of the decision makers on the committee that are ruling on which drugs are dispensed to the general public, 100% of them are getting money from the drug companies. speakers' fees, traveling events, hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars that they then don't even declare to the general public that there is a conflict. And so why isn't it the case with this when we are affecting the lives of our future leaders in this nation? The only answer that I can come with are two answers. One is the dumbing down aspect, and number two is just frankly just the money that's at risk. And, you know, this order that we've always talked about, it now is reaching way beyond just the borders of the United States in the medical profession into the World Trade Organization. We're tied into it through all of our trade acts, NAFTA and CAFTA and the World Health Organization and all these god-awful things. And sooner or later, you and I and a cadre of other freedom fighters are going to let it be known to people in a way that they can understand and embrace and act on that this has to stop.
And the government always says drugs are illegal because they're bad for you and we're trying to protect society. No, the government's like this. The government, they don't want you to use your drugs, they want you to use their drugs. So every night on TV, you see a weird-ass drug commercial trying to get you hooked on some legal-ish, and they just keep naming symptoms till they get one that you got, okay? It's like, are you sad? Are you lonely? You got athlete's foot? Are you hot? Are you cold? What you got? You want this pill, huh? You got to take this pill. They don't even tell you what the pill does. You see a lady on a horse or a man in a tub, and they just keep naming symptoms. Are you depressed? Are you lonely? Do your teeth hurt? I saw a commercial the other day that said, do you go to bed at night and wake up in the morning? Oh, they got one. I got that. I'm sick. I need that pill. The government trying to get you hooked on some legal ish. And that's the truth, man. The reason coke and weed are illegal in America don't got shit to do with your safety. The reason coke and weed are illegal in America is because the best coke and weed ain't made in America. If they made the good shit here, there'd be a coke and weed restaurant on every corner. That's right. Wouldn't be no Starbucks. It'd be Weed Bucks. McDonald's, McCocos. Give me a Happy Meal and an 8-Ball. Thank you. Krispy Kreme's Cracky Cream. Yo, that's how good Krispy Kreme donuts are. Krispy Kreme donuts are so good, if I told you right now they had crack in it, you go, I knew something was up. I knew. These donuts are too damn good, man. Got me knocking on the donut window at 2 o'clock in the morning. Come on, man, open up, man. Give me one more donut. I'll do anything. I'll suck your...
Schizophrenia is just a catch-all term for mental forms of mental behavior that we don't understand. In the 19th century, there was a term, melancholia, which we would now call bipolar depression, so forth and so on. But all forms of sadness, unhappiness, maladaptation, so forth and so on, were poured into this label, melancholia. Now, schizophrenia is a similar thing. I can remember an experience I had years ago. I was in the Tolman Library at the University of California, which is the psych library, and I was looking up some drug or something, and I just saw a book, and I pulled it off the shelf, a book about schizophrenia, and it said, the typical schizophrenic lives in a world of twilight imagining, marginal to his society, incapable of holding a regular job. These people live on the fringes, content to drift in their own self-created value system. I said, that's it. That's it. Now I understand. We have no tradition of shamanism. We have no tradition of journeying into these mental worlds. We are terrified of madness. we fear it because the Western mind is a house of cards, and the people who built that house of cards know that, and they are terrified of madness. Tim Leary once said, or I gave him credit for saying, he later told me he never said it, but whoever said it, this was a brilliant statement. Someone once said, LSD is a psychedelic substance which occasionally causes psychotic behavior in people who have not taken it. Right? And I would bet you that more people have exhibited psychotic behavior from not taking LSD but just thinking about it than ever exhibited it from taking it. Certainly in my family, I watched my parents both go psychotic from the mere fact that LSD existed. They would never have taken it. There is a great phobia about the mind. The Western mind is very queasy when first principles are questioned. Rarer than corpses in this society are the untreated mad, because we can't come to terms with that. A shaman is someone who swims in the same ocean as a schizophrenic, but the shaman has thousands and thousands of years of sanctioned technique and tradition to draw upon. In a traditional society, if you exhibit quote-unquote schizophrenic tendencies, you are immediately drawn out of the pack and put under the care and tutelage of master shamans. You are told you are special. Your abilities are very central to the health of our society. You will cure. You will prophesy. You will guide our society in its most fundamental decisions. Contrast this with what a person exhibiting schizophrenic activity in our society is told. They're told, you don't fit in. You are becoming a problem. You don't pull your own weight. You are not of equal worth to the rest of us. You are sick. You have to go to the hospital. You have to be locked up. You are on a par with prisoners and lost dogs in our society. So that treatment of schizophrenia makes it incurable. Imagine if you were slightly odd and the solution were to take you and put you, lock you into a place where everyone was seriously mad. That would drive anyone mad. If you've ever been in a madhouse, you know that it's an environment calculated to make you crazy and to keep you crazy. This would never happen in an aboriginal or traditional society. I wrote a book, I mean this has to be the wrap up because we're over time, but I wrote a book called The Archaic Revival. I signed it tonight for some of you. The idea there is that we have gone sick by following a path of untrammeled rationalism, male dominance, attention to the visible surface of things, practicality, bottom lineism. We have gone very, very sick. And the body politic, like any body, when it feels itself to be sick, it begins to produce antibodies or strategies for overcoming the condition of dis-ease. And the 20th century is an enormous effort at self-healing. Phenomena as diverse as surrealism, body piercing, psychedelic drug use, sexual permissiveness, jazz, experimental dance, rave culture, tattooing. The list is endless. What do all these things have in common? They represent various styles of rejection of linear values. The society is trying to cure itself by an archaic revival, by a reversion to archaic values. So when I see people manifesting sexual ambiguity or scarifying themselves or showing a lot of flesh or dancing to syncopated music or getting loaded or violating ordinary canons of sexual behavior, I applaud all of this, because it's an impulse to return to what is felt by the body, what is authentic, what is archaic. And when you tease apart these archaic impulses, at the very center of all these impulses is the desire to return to a world of magical empowerment of feeling. And at the center of that impulse is the shaman, stoned, intoxicated on plants, speaking with the spirit helpers, dancing in the moonlight, and vivifying and invoking a world of conscious living mystery. That's what the world is. The world is not an unsolved problem for scientists or sociologists. The world is a living mystery. Our birth, our death, our being in the moment, these are mysteries. They are doorways opening on to unimaginable vistas of self-exploration, empowerment, and hope for the human enterprise. And our culture has killed that, taken it away from us, made us consumers of shoddy products and shoddier ideals. We have to get away from that. And the way to get away from it is by a return to the authentic experience of the body. And that means sexually empowering ourselves, and it means getting loaded, exploring the mind as a tool for personal and social transformation. The hour is late. The clock is ticking. We will be judged very harshly if we fumble the ball. We are the inheritors of millions and millions of years of successfully lived lives and successful adaptations to changing conditions in the natural world. Now the challenge passes to us, the living, that the yet to be born may have a place to put their feet and a sky to walk under. And that's what the psychedelic experience is about, is caring for, empowering, and building a future that honors the past, honors the planet, and honors the power of the human imagination. There is nothing as powerful, as capable of transforming itself and the planet as the human imagination. Let's not sell it straight. Let's not whore ourselves to nitwit ideologies. Let's not give our control over to the least among us. Rather, you know, claim your place in the sun and go forward into the light. The tools are there. The path is known. You simply have to turn your back on a culture that has gone sterile and dead and get with the program of a living world and a re-empowerment of the imagination.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
And back to Washington, D.C. right now, where Deputy FDA Commissioner Steve Hoyer announced today that the U.S. was, quote, on its own, and that the FDA was not going to hold its hand like a goddamn child anymore. Take a look at this video here.
I don't give a rat's ass. Cram ding-dongs down your face. Eat them five at a time. Eat out of the f***ing garbage can, okay? Stand in front of the microwave with the door open running. Here, eat all that f***ing fake orange s***. Go ahead. All the fake f***ing trash that you guys shove in your f***ing pie holes. Eat that s***. Go get cancer.
According to AIDS, Hoyer will be taking some time off to live on a small organic farm in Peru. Brooke?
Thanks, Tucker. I can empathize with Commissioner Hoyer. It's not always easy trying to talk sense into millions of people.
Now, go find the others. com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.